the radical left, the Marxists, the anarchists, the agitators, the looters, and people who, in many instances, have absolutely no clue what they are doing.
Welcome to What Radicalized You, a podcast of stories and experiences that have shaped people's ideas about our world and the way society should function.
My name is Sharman Hussein. I am a Bangladeshi Muslim Queens nationalist from New York City, born and raised. And I identify as a political organizer, a consultant, the co-director of Queer Crescent, a sister, a daughter of immigrants who fled genocide and survived genocide. And I identify as a facilitator and transformative justice practitioner, as well as an abolitionist. Being born in Queens, New York, automatically creates a multiracial, LGBTQ-friendly immigrant experience that had me coming into myself as someone who knew that, like, women, femmes, gender nonconforming folks, trans folks were out on these streets. They were fighting for the rights of street vendors. Sex workers were fighting against the NYPD criminalizing and attacking them. I grew up with immigrant justice centers across my neighborhood that were mobilizing worker power. Coming into myself as a young Bangladeshi Muslim person, I grew up with domestic violence. And that radicalized me to become a feminist because I witnessed the way women were treated in my community and in my home, and I knew that that wasn't the life that I wanted. At the same time,
my father was a member of Jatiya Samajtantrik Dal, which was the National Socialist Party of Bangladesh. He was an organizer that helped refugees and political asylees get to Germany and out of Bangladesh safely. And I was super inspired by hearing his stories of how he organized protests, actions, aid growing up. And it was really formative for me to learn that Bangladeshi people in the wake of a liberation war were also people that were generative and dreaming of a future where women's rights, where political education, community organizing were a part of the vision as well for a free Bangladesh.
So I grew up extremely loved but also deeply connected to a Muslim community. I went to mosque every week and I learned the Quran and I learned about the tenets of Islam. And I also wore hijab. So even though I grew up in a multiracial community like Queens, my third grade teacher, Miss Elizabeth Nappy, called my hijab a stupid thing on my head. So when those things happen as like a young adult who's learning about the world, but also learning about femininity, learning about gender, learning about race, especially in a post 9/11 world, I became really radical. I became a loudmouth. I became somebody who spoke up for my friends when they were in abusive relationships. I became that friend that took my friends to get abortions and get sexual and reproductive resources. And so I just embodied this type of like radical feminism that was Queens. You know, it was centering women of color. It was centering fat women, dark skinned women, women who look like me. And so I just feel like Queens radicalized me. The experience of being a Bangladeshi Muslim radicalized me. I think one of the things that I learned early on was that even though I saw in Jackson Heights a really big presence of cisgendered men, South Asian men, who took up space, who were organizing different protests and panels. Behind the scenes, I saw women, predominantly women of color, who were the fierce organizers. They were the ones that if somebody was sick, they would mobilize food, care, mutual aid resources. They were the ones that when there were domestic workers that were being imprisoned by their upper class diplomat employers, or they were being exploited by restaurants, there were women behind all of these struggles that were doing worker right workshops, that were teaching people about knowing your rights when it came to the police. I grew up in a community that was heavily surveilled by the NYPD. We were not only being targeted as Muslim people or people perceived to be Muslim, but there was an increased amount of entrapment that caused a lot of panic and chaos in our communities. There were thousands of people that were self-deporting, but then there were also people that were enrolled and registered into government surveillance programs that made their lives really difficult. At the same time, we saw a surge in mental health issues as well as family issues when it came to migration and domestic violence. And so all of these issues felt extremely interconnected to me. There were young boys I grew up with that were, you know, in a basketball program, but at the same time were so hopeless and were deeply misogynist sometimes. And I would see them and experience their friendships or these relationships and just wonder, like, what is going on in our community that not only are white people oppressing us in the institutions we're a part of, in the schools we attend, but also internally our own community is hurting each other. And it was really sad to know at a young age that I couldn't trust cis men in my community. And so as I grew into my like high school self that became a youth organizer, I stayed away from cis men. And ironically enough, all of the organizing spaces I was a part of that were feminist organizing spaces didn't have cis men at the head of the table. It was actually women that were doing the hard work, the counseling, the political education, you know? And so when I was in high school, I met Sasha Ahuja, who is my mentor, and she recruited me to become a youth organizer at the Yaya Network. And the Yaya Network is a youth-led political education space that started as an anti-war organization. And we started doing anti-militarization workshops all across New York City. So I got trained and I learned about the war on terror. I learned about the military and police budget of New York City. And I went around to public schools across New York to teach young people about how the military targets young people of color. And at this point in history, we don't have an army draft that we had during World War I and World War II, right? We have a poverty draft now. So young people, specifically people that want to travel, people who need health insurance, people who want their college bills to be paid, end up enrolling in the military. And so my role as a youth organizer was to really equip people with the tools and the knowledge of what the military actually does and demystify a lot of the myths that the military was selling young people of color, right? So when the military would brag about giving people the opportunity to travel, you know, we would show people the real statistics of how many veterans were homeless. How many veterans had PTSD from bombing and killing children overseas? And that made me into an anti-war organizer that was effectively getting young people to not join the military. And experiences like that really gave me radical hope to talk to young people across the city that also believed capitalism was destroying our communities. They also believed that the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan were inhumane, Islamophobic, violent wars. To have those conversations at a young age, it really made me someone who believed that if you invest in the people, if you trust the people, they will become trustworthy. And so those relationships grew, they blossomed, and we successfully kicked out ROTC, which is the youth arm of the military, out of CUNY campuses, where we waged this campaign and we fought the administration and we demanded that young people are not sold off into the military at the hands of these public institutions where our tax dollars are going. So I was an organizer that just really was blessed with mentorship, with opportunities to engage politically, to have those like debates, right? And to learn about how people are seeing the socioeconomic issues in our lives. And then I joined East Coast Solidarity Summer, which is also another political education camp for South Asian young people. And I first joined as a youth participant and later became an organizer for half a decade, where I hosted alongside a group of brilliant South Asian organizers from all over the diaspora, a political education summer camp, where young people from all over the East Coast were awarded the opportunity to come spend a week with us in the woods and learn about militarism, racism, sexism, colorism, casteism. And we started planting these seeds of deep relationship, but also a deep commitment to social change in a long-term arc. And so these spaces cultivated the curiosity in me, it cultivated the transformative justice practice that I'm involved in now, and it just allowed me to think about, if we want to change the world at a mass scale, if we want to see the end of capitalism, we want to see the end of militarism, what are we building instead? What are we asking people to step into instead? If we are going to tell people that our government is out here destroying our communities, how are we going to give them the tools to actually change the communities that we come from? And so that's my radical hope. It's my radical practice. It's my love for the people. And even when the people let me down, somehow, like, I'm able to still remember that, like, none of us chose this. None of us have power. None of us even have imagined what could be possible yet, you know? So I've just been able to learn from all of these brilliant abolitionists who have taught me that, like, this long-term struggle will require so much of us, but also it will require so much of, like, possibility making, that your imagination and your ability to love the people, like, will actually give you the medicine you need to do this work for a long time. My personal story is one thing, but actually the values that we have is something that, like, that I think is, like, that's the juice, you know, like, organizers, people who actually are fighting every day, whether it be on Facebook or with their families or even going to a protest, like, the juice that we have is that 5-10 years ago, before this pandemic hit, nobody cared about organizers. Organizers were just like people that people were like, oh, they're just radicals that are yelling online about how Bush sucks and how Obama is also just as terrible. But fast forward to the pandemic, organizers were the one making sure that your neighbor had food. Organizers were the one that were fighting to defund the police. Like, we were the ones who were connecting the horrible dismantling of our public infrastructures to the war economy, you know? And so I just feel like this pandemic, it really just highlighted how integral organizers are to the social fabric of our communities.